don't mind just, you know, with everyone's acknowledgement that we're recording this meeting. Okay. Perfect.
That means no profanity.
No, it doesn't mean that.
So, are you good with the fact that it's being recorded?
Perfect.
And David and Bill as well?
Okay. Perfect.
Can you get a copy of the recording?
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. These newfangled ones, they just download it. It's really easy. So.
Anybody else coming from you?
No.
We are assembled.
So, I wanted to thank you all for the opportunity to come in and talk about this kind of wonderful opportunity with this piece of land. And I think maybe I should, do you know all of us and what our involvement has been on this? Maybe we'll go around.
I do not, yeah.
Have the introductions.
Oh, why don't we start with
Ali?
Yeah, let's start with you.
My name is Ali Erkai, as everybody knows, and I'm with Mac Investment Group. Mm-hmm.
I'm Chris Shears with Shears Atkins Rockmore.
And they know the history, of course, that we were involved
with Tom Brandis in that, I think, the first iteration before the last iteration. Then we worked for about, 6 months or 9 months on that scheme. So I have familiarity with not only the property, all the properties, but also the city's positions on all of it. So
fantastic.
That's why I'm here.
And Chris and I have known each other since he was 3 years old.
Right. We really have. It's a story that we could tell later on.
Chris, were you ever three?
He was. I have a picture of him.
Yeah, David does have a picture in my sandbox, right?
That's correct, with his sister.
Yep.
So, David Trevor, you know the work that we have done. I don't know if we were before you.
Yeah, you were before.
We were before. So you
no,
were
you were.
First.
You were after.
We were after.
You were during the RTA.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, I just watched with enthusiasm the opportunity kind of began to evolve and present itself, and Dana called us and asked if we would attend this meeting and be a part of the discussion about the possibility of moving forward, helping.
I think everybody that knows me, I'm Bill James. I live and work in the Cherry Creek area, commercial real estate appraisal, and I helped start up an organization called Transportation Solutions, which is interested in, Glendale is a very vital part of that, interested in enhancing livability, I guess, in the area as much as possible, and that's the interest that I have personally had, and Dana asked me to be a part of it as from that perspective, I guess.
And I'm Nancy Colby, authentic Persian voice, and also part of the MAC investment. And my involvement in the MAC and everything is that the city and my vision kind of departed. And I thought we'll get a wonderful vision of someone like Dana to come in and say what's the best thing to happen to our land, and that's why I'm here with her.
And I'm Dana, and I think kind of the brief history of how I got here is I'm generally attracted to projects that can have a big impact on a community, a bigger community than Glendale, in terms of the opportunity. I am not in any way acting as a consultant to the Colgis, although I must say that I've spent quite a few hours listening and trying to figure this out, and then to look objectively at the land and the situation and what might be of benefit to everybody involved. And that's what the beginning of this meeting really is about. But If some of you don't know, I've been, it's kind of an embarrassing long time, but 50 years working on projects in the metropolitan Denver area, primarily in downtown, and they've been projects that have involved historic preservation and places where a lot of different people of very diverse backgrounds and income groups would like to be, and communities which can generate a lot of pride in place. So those kind of things are kind of involved with my mission here. It's a huge long story, and we'll hear about it later.
Oh, God, that's me. Linda Cassaday, Deputy City Manager for the City of Glendale.
Mike Gross, and I'm a police captain in the police department downstairs, and for the last several years I've had the opportunity to be the project representative on this project.
And I'm Chuck Line. I'm also a Deputy City Manager here at the City of Glendale.
Right. The kind of the parameter of this meeting is I hope we'll be finished in an hour.
Okay.
And it's fine to talk fast. And I have worked over the years, a lot of years, with David and with Chris, and I have huge respect for their judgment, and they both know that I gripe a lot about architects and say rather insulting things sometimes.
Yeah, we survive.
Both of these guys have a lot of vision, and I love working with them and, you know, talking about the future of the city, and there's so many things that are changing now in our world, those come into play with a situation like this. And especially thinking about Glendale, which my history with Glendale was only when I had four little boys. We were always out here at the White Sands swimming mm-hmm. pool constantly. And what happened to it?
It's Portofino, and then Cherry Creek Tennis and Sailing Club, and then now it's called Cherry Creek Club because it really doesn't have tennis or sailing.
So, that the exercise club?
No, it's right over here. It's an apartment complex that was built in the 60s.
Oh, okay. At any rate, I thought it might be interesting and helpful to us if we'd start out, and this is a little exercise that a lot of us use in many different communities, but I wanted to hear it from you all. What would you identify in Glendale would be the 10 most important buildings, locations, destinations, symbols of the community? Can we just roar through 10 of them and as quickly as possible?
I don't think we're really prepared to be offering anything on our side. We're really here to listen to what you all want to present for that piece of property. So,
yeah, that was, I mean, my idea today. That was, you know, that it was more of a presentation. Have two wonderful architects.
I think that my goal was to kind of get a context here whatever happens there under which auspices of it should be something that really brings a lot of attention and pride to this community. And so that was the reason that I was asking for the context. But I guess this is not to be a conversation, it's just a presentation. And so the message is delivered. So our inspirations in thinking about this have been Dallas and Austin and Vancouver, Las Vegas, Tehran, Georgetown, and Washington, D.C. And recently I was in Austin, Texas, which is just the most amazing place at this juncture. But at any rate, I'm going to pass this around to you all, and this is just out of Google, but this shows all of the apartment units, the high-rise apartment units in Austin, Texas, all centered really around the river and downtown. And, you know, the interesting thing is that we in Denver, we can't do these high-rises. And, of course, none of us can do condominiums until the law gets changed. But there's conversation about the law being changed. And there are some people that are quite hopeful. And, of course, in Cherry Creek, people with very big bucks and willing to take very big risks are doing condos. Are you doing any condos now? Two, three, two?
Two.
How about you?
One.
One. And I would say the developers are very brave because the state law really stands above all else. But at any rate, it's amazing.
Austin is fabulous.
It's amazing to go there to see. And, you know, when the predictions are that this community, this metropolitan community, will double in size, obviously we're going to have to get over our hysteria about high-rise buildings. Because Denver just, you know, the neighborhoods just get bonkers over the subject. So in my sitting out here and worrying about what would be great for this piece of land as it fits into your plans for 180, and something that would really bring a lot of attention and iconic presence to this area, I saw high-rise buildings. And with high-rise buildings, we get into residential. And I understand that that is something that in the past the city has not wanted. But if you begin to look at this from a kind of a different perspective, I think that you might be willing to continue conversations on the subject. And the first meeting that I had with Mike, we talked a little bit about this and why you don't want residential there, et cetera. But I think when you look at what's going on in some of our sister cities like Austin and Dallas, it's pretty amazing. And then there's some architectural examples of some of the things that are going on in other countries, and I'll just pass this around. So the opportunity in this particular location to, in a sense, be smarter than Denver is, and also because of its location, to be able to do things that are not going to get people hysterical about blocking their views because of just where it is. And because of the river, and so that is the thought. We don't have a specific presentation, and we will not have a specific presentation until we believe that the city of Glendale is open to looking at something like that. And up to this point in time, it would seem that you know, the gates have been sort of closed, and it is very much of a gateway location. And from my perspective, looking at it, the lower levels would be, obviously have to accommodate parking, and would also want to accommodate some very high-end retail. And we already have a very high-end retail store there as a small anchor. And a lot of times in shopping centers, often, as you all know, the anchors that people want are great big national chains, and they don't recognize sort of the local opportunities. But certainly in the Union Station project, we have concentrated on local. And now there's a lot of sort of national emphasis on shop local and eat local and be healthy and do this and do that. But we have the wonderful location there to, you know, enhance what's naturally there. And to do something that's very sustainable and would be a natural magnet for this community, and also for the very imaginative plans that you have about the 180. So I thought, well, how would we persuade you to look favorably on this? And I don't know exactly how the deal might work, but one of the things that Bill and I talked about is that the bicycle traffic down there is amazing right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's almost amazing to the point of being scary. I unfortunately have a friend who was killed on the Cape at night by a bicycle. And I don't know what the nighttime traffic is down there, but obviously the lighting on this project could be just sensational and observable from almost the whole metropolitan area. But can you talk just a little bit about, you know, how bicycles might fit in, and from the transportation perspective, how we could help the situation on Colorado Boulevard?
Well, yeah. Colorado Boulevard, of course, everybody knows, it's like, if you talk about traffic in Denver metro area, Colorado Boulevard is everybody's example. It's the worst. And it just seems to be the worst where the creek crosses it. So that's a challenge and an opportunity, I guess. The conversation that Dana and I had were, here's an opportunity of a development that could take place that could have the opportunity to mitigate that in the context of all the changes that are taking place. More bicycles being ridden long term. People talk about the possibility that cars will no longer have drivers in them and things like that. It's things to try to plan for in any development. This part of town is an urban center. It is the urban center other than downtown Denver, and there's an opportunity there with great, sometimes dated transportation infrastructure, and there's an opportunity to integrate any project. A large project is a great opportunity to integrate it with the surrounding community and enhance the livability of the whole area. Part of the reason I'm at the table from the community standpoint, I guess, is having any large developments that take place, any opportunity to take place, having them work together with each other is better than not. You end up with something that in transportation and other areas, it just works better and it makes livability happen. The goal I've always had, the public interest activities that I've been involved in is to make it so that all transportation modes are balanced. When somebody wants to get from one place to another to do whatever they live, work, and play, they can do it in a fairly seamless way and easy way, and they have facilities to do that. So we large developments create opportunities to make that happen. And so if a couple of developments or a single development takes place, if they can collaborate with each other, it just works out to be better. I'd like to be a part of that, bring an objective view of those kinds of features to make it enhance that result. I'm glad to expend some effort to do it.
I would think that in this listening department that you might wonder, well, you know, where would the money come from? Because I've worked all these years and I don't have really very deep pockets, which might be a good thing for me because I have a tendency to get, involved with very difficult projects, and it's better to have groups. But I went through and thought, well, if you could assume that there was a warm welcome and something of a thaw here, then I would proceed to talk to some of the developers that I have either worked with or that I respect a lot. And I would think that, I would go and I'd say, we have this team that's together here. And all of this noise that's been going on about, the disagreements out here, that assuming that we can get this put together, that this is the direction that we all want to proceed in. And so the first group I go to is the Union Station Alliance, and that's the group that I work with on the Union Station. And that's primarily the Larimer Square Group and the Sage Hospitality Group and the primary equity in the project is McQuinney. That's a young development group that's done a lot of stuff up and down the front range here, and they're very, very imaginative. If they didn't want to do it for one reason or another, just the Larimer Square Group alone is kind of operating with sort of two different arms at this juncture. But Jeff Hermanson is the equity and has put together quite a large equity group. And then the people that do the leasing and are very visionary are Joe Vostres, Pat McHenry, and Rod Wagner. And they're very big believers in the local involvement. And they also have a very a good eye because, you know, one of the things that's so enormously fun about the development business, if you get a lot of different people around the table working on a development, there are all these different ideas come up. And I sometimes look at the architects and their eyes are rolled up like, oh God, here we go again. But it's really fun to collect it. There's some nice thing, I pick on them all the time. But and then I feel so sorry for them sometimes because, you know, I'm working on a little project right now and there are three different age groups involved with it. And it's just amazing. It's like stereotypes, you know. And I wish the kid would shut up. But then it turns out, you know, he's sensitive to the millennial group. And he's got some really good ideas. But at any rate, the Larimer Square group is great. And then some of the people that are working in Cherry Creek now that have very deep pockets, but I'm originally from Kansas, so I feel like I can get along well with Phil Andrews and David Steele. And, you know, you were telling me just the other day that they said they were kind of through in Cherry Creek and what was going to be next. And of course, they're involved with the oil business, so maybe the next is just waiting patiently. But and then there are all these developers from Austin and Dallas, and I just don't see how they can build any more down there, but maybe they can. But at any rate, I'm going through this because they're here. If we can solve some of these issues that we're looking at. And I don't know, Chris, do you have any genius thoughts about, I mean, I am talking about tall buildings, high-rise buildings that would be, as they are, you know, arranged together, would be night and day a really focal point in the community. And I am talking about people living in those towers and having sensational views all over. And then, I think I may have mentioned before, but one of my, I have a very small office, but one of my very valued employees lives at 460 South Forest. And she lives in a condo there. And she said she thought that the view from her place would be to be able to look out and see the mountains, but also to see the city with these high-rise buildings that would be designed in such a way that they would be very complementary to one another, as a lot of the stuff in Vancouver has been done lately.
So. Well, you know, I, having had some experience in Glendale, I think that if I were to answer Dana's question, I would start with Cherry Creek. And the fact that you've got that exposure, and that was always the emphasis, and still is, for this community to engage Cherry Creek, and it's, you know, it's interesting that Cherry Creek connects. It's an open space system. It's the Greenway system. I've ridden almost the entire Greenway system on my bicycle, and it's incredible. If you ever do it, you'll be surprised at how wonderful it is, because you see it from a different perspective, and you would see Glendale from a different perspective. But this property is, you know, right there. It's right there on the creek, and it's a property that just begs to be developed in a complementary way to what has already been planned on the balance of all of that property. And it seems that it seems to make a lot of sense to figure out a program for that property that does complement the rest, because otherwise it's just simply going to be this vacant piece of land. And I don't know anything about the history except what I know from, you know, years ago about the dealings with the city and the Kobe family. I guess I just don't want to know. I think what Dana is saying is wipe the slate clean. Let's figure out some appropriate complementary use and a very wonderful design solution for the property. And that benefits the city as much as anyone, if not more than anyone else. And of course, the other thing I've mentioned is rugby. I'm starting to make a list here. I include Shotgun Willis. You can't avoid that. But I think this property really deserves a project, and a great project, and that's the vision that Dana and McColgies have come up with. David?
Mm-hmm. Well, in all the discussions that Dan and I've had and with you over the years, I mean, I think there's a set of principles that still endure that we employed at Union Station that start with this idea of kind of an iconic visibility and a great central place, which is all what you've talked about all these years. And so Dana asked us to think about how could we leverage all the investment that you've made over all these years and the vision that you have for this project and take what we've learned in all the projects that we've worked on together, but first starting with this iconic opportunity for visibility, and not only just in and of the project itself, because this is it's certainly this monumental opportunity for Glendale, but as Glendale is in the center of this enormous metropolitan region, how can that visibility extend beyond the boundaries of Glendale? And secondly, what has made Union Station and so many other projects build on that iconic visibility is the connectivity, both internally in the way that the project is planned, but more importantly, externally, how those connections, and those are some of the things that we talked about when we worked together a few years ago. We have an important opportunity at Colorado and Virginia to pull all the energy through that Virginia and through the center of the project, and it's important to really understand that access and how that can be channeled right through the main in creating a new Main Street through this project, which again is I think very congruent with all the things that the project currently is envisioned. One of the things that is always important in any one of these kinds of projects that become iconic and can change a community is to have a great central space. And it's certainly the case in a small way at Union Station, but here that idea is also congruent with what everything that we've talked about with you and everything that you're continuing to think about in terms of the 180 project. But to use this hub and to leverage the foundation of what you're thinking about right now into being able to go with much, much more density and bring much, much more development that would leverage all that infrastructure and all the rest of the investment of the project. And then finally, even at Union Station, and especially when you think about Lower Downtown, but when you look at the microcosm of Union Station, there are all sorts of districts, both horizontally across the landscape from the east side to the west side, and vertically from below grade to the on-grade stuff to what's happening above grade. It's this complicated, interesting mix of uses that happens not only internally, but then as it relates back across in the connectivity to Lower Downtown and the Platte. And you can see how it leverages the value of the land. And just a few short years ago, Dana and others were buying properties down there for between $1 and $5 a square foot, and now the property values around those spaces are $750 a square foot. So, the opportunity to maybe take all of this that you've worked on and leverage it into an additional conversation layering on the new potential of some of the investors that Dana's talked about. So there are many that she hasn't talked about that we've worked together on that are frankly interested in having more flexibility than they can have in Denver in terms of being able to go vertically. And it's not only just apartments or condominiums, but there are a variety of other uses that we know people from Texas are interested in Colorado because it's very familiar to them, but it's different, and there's something a little bit better about Colorado in terms of its seasonality and the ability to be outside and to be able to connect to nature. We have projects, we have two or three projects that are in development and construction in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and it's very easy to have all of our meetings in Denver because folks from Texas like to come to Denver. You know, not only to ski, but to recreate in the summer. It's very difficult to do any of that in Texas, either summer or winter. They have a very small shoulder season to be outside. So Texans know that an exterior, outside, water-related development can be incredibly successful, and the folks that have invested in those developments are interested in other places to invest. So we just thought it would be great to be able to be here and have an open conversation and to see if it's possible that we could kind of restart the engine on this project and develop some additional energy and enthusiasm and help you to make the project happen.
So I think leverage is kind of a big word. And go ahead.
I'd like to build on that, if I may. I'll build on what I said before, as well as what Chris and Dave have said. They're creators. I'm more of an analyst. The forces that are at work, I observe the forces that are at work. We talked about Union Station, and one of the things that's, and Cherry Creek as well. I think Glendale has the opportunity, this part of Glendale has the opportunity to be the next big thing. And how can you make that happen? Well, some of the history that's there, one of the big hurdles seems to be residential. I remember the Central Platte Valley, and I remember Cherry Creek, and as those areas have redeveloped and fits and starts and just blossoming wonderfully, when people started living in the Central Platte Valley was when it made a big difference. That was a hurdle that accelerated the redevelopment took place. I also remember in Cherry Creek North, they created the first business improvement district in the state, and that business improvement district just wasn't designed to accommodate residential use. And they're adapting to it, they're dealing with it. But the point is that it took a while for residences, for the society to get comfortable with, you know, living in places that are right up close to commercial spaces. Well, in the last 20 or 30 years, generally people have gotten comfortable with that sort of thing. And those are a couple of places where it's happened. My point is, I pride myself in comparing land use and transportation. And in order to achieve having the multi-modes that work together on a balanced basis where somebody can have seamless and easy ways of getting around, it helps a lot to have the land uses mixed together rather than distant from each other as seduced by the car and drove long distances, and that's sort of moving away from that. Well, one of the elements of that is making it so that people, the place where they live and the place where they work are close together. That just tends to work better. So and the Cherry Creek movement, the evolution, the Central Platte Valley evolution are examples of how that has happened. And thankfully, our whole society is buying into that idea more. Makes the real estate development much more complex, much more messy, harder to deal with. Okay, that's the way it is, but if the end result is worth it. And again, I perceive the opportunity for Glendale and its surroundings to be the next big thing, the next urban center in this metro area. That one of the good fortunes is that being a separate jurisdiction and has control of land use makes it so that the density that seems to we're learning works well is easier to get away with in this environment. That we have a good fortune of a political environment that is that way. So, I think it's a great opportunity. It requires collaboration. When it's messy like that, it can be difficult. That's the opportunity, I guess, that caused me to say yes to them.
Well, but, 10 years from now, I think you remember when affordable housing was a dirty word. It's not quite as bad as it used to be. And now density is for Denver at any rate, is the cause for all this hysteria. But the practicality of it is that everybody wants a safe community. And the safest place in the United States right now is the island of Manhattan, interestingly enough. Because there are lots of people around, and it's very walkable, and there are people out on the streets at really all hours. So it seems to me that fits in with your overall dream. But I tried to look at this from the municipality's point of view, and I would think, with the vision and the investment that you've been making over recent years for such an interesting sports destination and retail, mixed use, that an idea like this might be, this is a good idea, but what's in it for us? I mean, we've been making all these investments, so I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this, but I thought maybe if we got so that we were all marching around together and trying to collaborate, that we could come up with some sort of a system whereby, as this project evolves over a number of years, but there's there's some sugar in it, a special sugar in it for the community. And that would be part of the formula. And also I would think that we would want to be sure that we are doing something certainly that has to do with sustainability and that has to do with taking care of maybe some people that need a little extra care. Because a project like this, I think, can be enormously successful. But the challenges are human nature. And getting to a point of view where we could all sort of rise above some of the, I guess I call it garbage, but that probably is not a very technical word. And you could take that out of the listening machine. But there's some shorter words that could even be quite descriptive. But I think that it's essential, and that would be a requirement. And then I think that from what I have heard around in the neighborhood from various people, I think that everyone getting convinced that, that Nazrin, your family is all, I think we all have families and we all understand that sometimes people don't go in the same direction. But the perception is that maybe you all aren't kind of together, and I was going to ask you to address that subject, because it's one that we've had quite a lot of conversation about. And just as an editorial comment, it's the sort of thing that can try people's patience inside and outside the family.
First of all, I would not put too much emphasis on what everybody reads in certain papers. We're all on the same page. Here's Ali and I. And you mentioned Saeed. Mm-hmm. We all talk. We're all on the same page. Everybody has different ways of doing the same thing. Even with that, we're all still doing it the same way. So we're all together. I don't know how else to say it. But I wanted to say something else about having residential, why I have always felt that it needs to have residential, and I've said it before. No matter how big or how wonderful any project is, if nobody takes pride in it, it'll fizzle after a while, and it's been proven. I mean, even Glendale was big at one time, and what happened? Everything just went away because there is no pride. Nobody owns. I mean, very few little people own property in residential in Glendale, and most everybody comes and goes, so renters. So I think one way of seeing that any project will last a long time, if you can get the people to have pride in them, their kids or their grandkids, you will have people that visit and revisit. If we have wonderful high-end residential, let's say the baby boomers are now buying it, they have their grandkids visit, they'll always come back and visit because they had a good time, they had a place to go to. So this is like ensuring any project that they will have people coming in, customers coming in for retail and restaurants years from now. I mean, it's very short-sighted to think you can put something grand anywhere and not have residential and not have pride in it that it would last. It would not.
I mean, you know, it used to be, because once again, I've been around so long, but none of the lenders would look at mixed-use projects. I mean, they just wouldn't look. Now they don't want to do anything unless it's mixed-use, because they've found out that a lot of the goals of city building are met where you can have mixed uses together where people can, get to work walking and... there's a fabulous project that's coming in out close to DIA that I don't know whether you all are in on it or not, but that Panasonic's putting in. And it's patterned after a community outside of Tokyo that's all computer organized. And, you know, and it's one of those places where you don't really even own an automobile, that, you know, you just ring it up and here it comes and takes you someplace. And the schools are all extremely superior because of the way the community's designed. But we have the opportunity here to do this sort of thing. So I don't know unless it, yeah.
You know, Dana, what we've also been talking about is if you look very specifically at sports and entertainment districts that historically have had some success but now are exploding. And you can go through throughout the country and throughout the world and that are going into their next generation. What can we learn from purely sports and entertainment districts? What are they doing? You go to Los Angeles and at the Staples Center, they're building residential as fast as they can to keep the sports and entertainment strong. Las Vegas is completely transformed since the residential component has been part of the backbone of entertainment. And you could think about San Antonio, which when they started the Riverwalk, just exploded when they started to add residential. And the entertainment became real. It became 24 hours a day, and it wasn't just a one-liner anymore to go to the Riverfront District. Dana already mentioned Austin, but even when you think about our own sports and entertainment district in lower downtown, it wasn't until we really started building residential that the energy and the financial returns started to just explode, even in Denver. We're working on a project both in Miami on Brickell and in South Beach, and their entertainment districts are just absolutely dependent on the opportunity for people to live and be around there 24 hours a day. So we could go around the world and around the country. If you go online and look at the new Detroit Red Wings Stadium and their entertainment district, which is just on the entertainment part alone is over about $1.5 billion. They're surrounding it with 20,000 units of residential housing. to make it work, and that's what Staples is now doing in Los Angeles. So it's at least worth a discussion to think about what could go around and wrap around the 180 project if we looked at verticality, density, and this whole idea of a regional iconic structure that is more than just one building but an entire development that could potentially go vertical.
Dana spent her entire career creating vision for the city of Denver.
Fighting
for it. No, always difficult. Always difficult. And Larimer Square, Lower Downtown, the Prospect neighborhood, Denver Union Station, I could go on and on. She's still got many, many ideas. And it's been interesting to watch this because she has overcome all of the skeptics, all the skepticism associated with these projects. Yes, you have. When have you ultimately lost? Everything has been done.
I lost Gates.
Yeah, well, we don't want to talk about that now. But you know, my point is that this is a great idea. How it's done, how it's implemented is up to a team that gets together and works hard to. But this is another one of Dana Crawford's ideas that she's come up with and working with the Coheys. And as David said, it's certainly worth proceeding with a conversation to see if it's possible. We certainly hope.
That sounds like a good wrap. and so we have about 12 and a half minutes left. Although I guess that you predetermined that you all weren't going to talk, we probably won't leave until you can talk.
Well, I think one of the things that I would say to all of you, Glendale is 369 acres, and we are the most densely populated city in the state already. We are not lacking for residential spaces in the city of Glendale. People that live in Glendale can walk to work, walk to the store. We have many of those components already now. It may not be in the area that you want it to be in, but Glendale already is that community, and people take pride in the city. And people like to live in the city of Glendale. So I think it's challenging, I think, for us, because we're not talking Denver, we're talking Glendale, which is a very small area and already populated with hotels and office buildings and residential and retail. And we have all of those components. Again, it may not be in the areas that you would like for it to be, but that is a zoning issue, and that is something that is part of the city's zoning code. So those things are established, and while we appreciate everything that you're saying here in terms of what you would like it to be, Glendale is what it is. It is a very small area and already has many of those things that you talked about.
Yes, that's well said.
So you want this to be a conversation, but I'm not sure what the counter to that is. We have that already.
I had just hoped that we've been lucky enough. I don't mean we as Coheys. I think Glendale and Denver, Colorado, been lucky enough to have Dana, and I was hoping we could take advantage of her vision and create something wonderful. So I'm still hoping.
I'll respond to what you said because I was pretty much counter to the kind of thing I was talking about. I wonder if the existing residential is sufficient. And that's the time you planning balance issue at one point.
But the existing residential is in areas that are allowed to be residential.
Right,
so.
Right.
That is part of the planning for the city.
And I think the challenges that you bring up are challenges that, by the way, every neighborhood in Denver, Cherry Creek is also discussing. I mean, where do you put nightclubs? Where do you put bars? Which, as you know, politically, even in Cherry Creek, those are challenges that the residents wrestle with all the time. And it happens in downtown and in Larimer, even in Larimer Square, that they are, you know, more residential, more bars, restaurants. I mean, all of these things are struggles, how they handle 16th Street Mall. So they're not things that they are things that, you know, these are questions that I think all communities deal with, and it's, I don't think there's a one size fits all magic bullet that fixes or solves any of those issues. But I think, as Linda mentioned, you know, that we are currently the highest residential density in the state of over 9,000 people per square mile. And not saying that it's just a fact. So on the residential density question, even in places in Denver, there's that whole discussion about more residential, more office, more retail, more all of those things. Those same discussions are going on at 9th in Colorado. Those same things are going on. What to do with the extra area at the mall on the west side of the mall. So, I mean, you know, these are all questions, and I think all similar type of discussions that are going on in a lot of communities.
If I may, and absolutely you're right. When you've got a development as large as this one is, an objective analysis of the balance of the uses, I wonder if there's an opportunity again to have it so that residential could be closer to the other uses and still work. You've got a project that is quite large, and that creates that opportunity. And if that project became very high density and completely built out and had no residential in it, then that balance, I think, might be disrupted.
But
others are better than I am at analyzing, you know, what that balance really ought to be. I don't
sure.
know.
No.
But at least addressing the question and addressing the question in a collaborative way for the best outcome.
But we are surrounded by residential, so it's not as though residential is a mile away or 2 miles away. We're 369 acres. Residential is there, and the project is there. So we have a lot of residential now. Developing additional residential or replacing residential in the areas for which it is zoned is a different issue. For areas for which it is not zoned, that becomes a challenge because that's not part of the overall city planning.
And if you look at, as Linda was mentioning, that you're absolutely right that we have, some of the areas that you were mentioning, you know, the Staples Center and other ones that, residential was significantly far away. In this case, I mean, I'm just saying, just let's say just this location, the land that you're referring to, within one block you have, 4550 is 288 units. You just had an apartment complex just is about almost complete at 341. You have 324 units at here. It's now called the Alistair. Mike Zollner's old property. He bought twice and sold twice. So and then we have a balance of other hundreds and hundreds of other units. So it's just something to keep in mind. I mean, it's just it's not in land uses. It's not always apples to apples we're also talking about an area, as you mentioned, that's a large development area. It's not altogether, though. We have to remind ourselves it's not altogether that large. It's still, even though this is an infill, look at an infill development, or even the Colgee's property is the area outside the floodplain is 3.8 acres. So, these are lots that are still in the I'm talking about compared to the Gates and other places, still fairly small locations, which creates its own challenges just from architects and engineers to have access and and parking and all of the amenities that are necessary for any type of development. So,
Chuck, has there been a specific discussion in the city to keep the height low versus going vertical?
Yes, I mean, you know, the you know, when you look at any height requirements in the city of Glendale, that, you know, a study was done and looked at also what was going on in Denver. You know, I think, you know, it's, even though we're a separate community, I think it's important that communities have some type of compatibility with each other. You know, similar to even in neighborhoods in Denver, are try to be compatible with each other. You know, downtown has transition areas that transition from the very high density to the medium density to into the low density. And I think so we have looked at those compatibility issues with Denver, and looked at, you know, if you look at height requirements in Glendale, they're very similar to some of the height requirements in Cherry Creek and also in the rest of Denver. Yeah, you know, at least at the time that they were approved. I mean, currently in Denver, I think, and you probably know better than I do, is that some of the areas that have gone up, especially in the North Cherry Creek area, have been done through PUD, but were special exception area compared to the areas that by Adams Street and the other areas north of, north of Third.
That's all been rezoned to be more mixed use, so that
correct.
The entertainment and the residential would be actually encouraged. And so,
correct.
I think that's the sort of the basis of the conversation is, would you be open to a further conversation about encouraging more verticality and more integration of use and more energy and more of a higher density?
Currently on any agenda, there's no current plans to revisit those parts of our zoning code.
What would be the downside of taking a fresh look at this site? Is that something you could be enthusiastic about? Is it something you would be open to? Is there a particular reason why you might not want to entertain this?
Well, it's not that. I don't think that's what we said. We said we currently don't have any plans to revisit any of those things. So
it's not zoned for that, and so staff, that's not something within our power to change the zoning for the city. So we work within the zoning that we have in our code. And as all of you have known, because we've worked with you for many years, that area is not zoned for residential. There are other areas within the city that are zoned for residential, but that area is not.
Mm-hmm. And that's very similar to, I always try to go back to other areas in Denver, is that, zoning also has, you know, certain predictability for the people that have adjacent property uses, and in Denver, and in those have been, you know, very, you know, challenging discussions even in Denver, is when they went through Blueprint Denver and did that big revision to their zoning code. Typically, and I think you, even in Denver, as they went through actually a revision of the zoning code, almost all the areas are downzoned. Well, I mean, as much as we talk about that all these areas upzoned, I mean, most of the areas around Louisiana Station, a lot of other areas after neighborhood involvement, did not go that direction toward a lot higher density.
Well, Cherry Creek did, and if you remember, long before and long after Dana started in Lower Downtown, well after the entertainment district of Larimer Square was established, you know, the Lower Downtown, you could not live there. It was illegal to live in Lower Downtown. And so there was a conversation about the development and the opportunity from the success of Larimer Square. Could we expand the success of that entertainment district into lower downtown, and what could we do in terms of our thinking of our current zoning that might encourage that to be more successful. So that was, you're absolutely right, Chuck, it was a difficult conversation, but now people feel quite comfortable living above the entertainment zone, and it was illegal.
But I think we need to keep it, but as we keep in mind, that we're talking about an area, not a lot. We're not talking about a small area. We're talking about an area that was square miles in size. And where Glendale is 369 acres in that same square mile, so if we would compare it to lower downtown, we have over, like, I think it's like 2,900 apartment or total units in this city. So I think we do need to keep in mind that we're still talking about an area that at that time when they were allowing any residential, that we were talking about, that discussion was in an area of square miles in size that should they allow residential. I mean, I'm just saying, just an apples to apples comparison.
Absolutely.
It's not the same as an area that is only a couple blocks away from another area that has different requirements. And I think those are, but just that's something just to keep in mind, on an apples to apples comparison. But I think currently there's no current plans to look at there's nothing on the agendas or anything to be able to change to currently look at rezoning those areas or any of the areas of our city.
So may I just, we're kind of running a little bit over, but
sure.
And most of the communities that I've worked with, there has been, from a staff perspective, an expression of flexibility. And so I guess my question would be, for the three of you, is there any sense of flexibility if we were to write a letter that would request further examination of this really rather beneficial idea from our perspective to persuade you of its benefits? Is there any attitude of flexibility?
Currently, we have a lot of issues, as you're probably aware of the history right now, is that we have things that I promised the council for the Coogies that we would not discuss, and we have, you could say, as you mentioned, baggage or garbage that we have to work through prior to staff even looking at even examining if we have any flexibility or not.
Okay. I guess we're done.
We are.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
It's like a beautiful day out there. So
it is.
Spend some time outside.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Very nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Thanks
for setting this up.
Thank you,
Linda.
Bye. Thanks so much.
Good to see you, Linda.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have you.
Thanks.
So still.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Hold on.